Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening in. Today, I have a special treat for you. I had the privilege of attending a very intimate tasting hosted by Tyson Stelzer in support of Wine Australia and Wine Tasmania. Tyson Stelzer is an award-winning wine writer, television presenter, and international speaker. He was named the International Wine and Spirit Communicator for the year of 2015 of the International Wine and Spirit Competition, the Wine Communicators of Australia, Australian Wine Communicator of the Year of 2015 and 2013, and the International Champion Writer of the Year in 2011, and the Louis Roederer International Wine Writers Awards. These wines were exceptional, and Tyson was not only a fantastic host, but an incredible person to interview. His knowledge and passion are exceptional. I know you are going to enjoy this interview, and I'm hoping it piques your curiosity to seek out some wines from Tasmania. So today I am at Cork Buzz in New York City, and I was very privileged to be able to come and taste wines of Tasmania off of an invite by Tyson Stelzer. And it's my first experience with Tasmanian wines, and I was really blown away. They really are wonderful. And I knew nothing about the fact that we had sparkling and Chardonnay and Pinot there and the variations between them. So first off, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, thank you for the chance to be on this podcast. It's such a privilege. I am an Australian wine, well, I call myself a communicator now rather than a writer. I started off by writing books and magazine articles, which I still do, but also television, radio, hosting events, hosting tours to Champagne and other great parts of the wine world, and showcasing great wines of the world to the great palates of the world. And in part of my focus on writing about the wines of Champagne, I've become particularly interested in Australian cool climate wines, particularly sparkling wines, and consistently Tasmania has stepped forward as the epicenter of Australian cool climate winemaking. And for that reason, I thought now is a great time to take these incredible wines and showcase them, particularly here in New York and also in San Francisco this week, as a chance to show a bit of a sneak preview of wines that are really not available for the most part outside of Tasmania. There are a few of these wines that are imported to America at the moment, but in fact, Tasmania makes less than 1% of all Australian wine, and of that tiny 1%, just 5% of that reaches export markets, and of that 5%, only a small amount comes to the States. So these are very rare, unique, and boutique wines, and very special.
Oh, so I'm even more privileged that I got to taste some of these, because they really...
Absolutely.
I was told by the other gentleman that one of the sparklings, it was only like the third time or fourth time it's ever been poured outside of Tasmania.
Yes. So. That's true. These wines have not been shown around the world. In fact, my event here last year was the very first Tasmanian showcase on US soils ever. And so what we're doing this week has been the second and third of those events. But an exciting opportunity to see where the future of cool climate viticulture is going. And in fact, while these wines are made in very small amounts, some of them are available here and the others are seeking the opportunity to be available. Not that they need to sell more wine, because it's a limited resource that's super popular in Australia. It all gets drunk at home at the moment, but they'd like to be able to offer these great wines to the interested palates of the wine trade, media and public over here as well.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about Tasmania. You're saying it's cool climate, but what is the topography like? What's the geography like? The overall climate? Do we see huge diurnal shifts? What do we have in terms of that?
Tasmania is a unique place because it's different in its terroir, its climate, and its geology to mainland Australia. Australia is the smallest continent, the biggest island. It's hot, it's dry. We know the stereotypes of Australia. Tasmania is different because it's small and it's further south. So, of course, that in the southern hemisphere means that it's colder. It has a very maritime climate because the rain and the winds blow across from Bass Strait and from the ocean. right across the west coast of Tasmania, which makes the west coast virtually inhospitable and unsuitable for viticulture, the east coast quite dry, the southern corner quite dry, and the northern corner quite wet and quite cool. And for that reason, this place is home to great aromatic whites in general, but particularly Chardonnay as a still wine, Pinot Noir as a still wine, and most of all, Chardonnay, Pinot, and a little bit of Meunier as sparkling wines. And the more I look at the sparkling wines of Tasmania in the context of what I'm reviewing in Champagne all the time, the more I see that there's nowhere else in the Southern Hemisphere, and for that matter in the Northern Hemisphere, that's able to produce wines that have the elegance of Tasmania. These are a natural acidity, cool climate, long ripening, cold nights, high acid retention wines that have an effortlessness that I don't see anywhere else outside of Champagne, anywhere on earth.
And typically, since we're on the sparkling, are they made in the Champagne style?
Almost all Tasmanian sparklings are made using the full traditional method, which requires fermentation in the bottle in which it's sold, which is mandated, of course, in Champagne, but very much optional around the rest of the wine world. And in cheaper sparkling from elsewhere, usually the shortcut methods of transfer or Charmat tank ferment or carbonation tend to be used. But in Tasmania, there's a premium mandate, which means that there is a focus almost exclusively on traditional method to produce more complexity in the wines, more texture, better balance. It's more effort and more cost to do that. But the difference in Tasmania compared with Champagne is that they're able, for the most part, to do that at a lower cost than the cost in Champagne, because the grapes cost one third of the price of Champagne grapes. Okay.
So going to that price point, do you think that's because Tasmania at this point is not so world known that these prices are lower? Do you think that as it shows itself, because these wines were spectacular, so as it shows itself to more people outside of Tasmania, do you envision these great prices going up?
Almost all Tasmanian wines consumed in Australia, and Australia is a very price-sensitive market, and we also have this glass ceiling of Champagne. And for the most part in Australia, Champagne sells for, with a few exceptions, above about $40 or $50, not dissimilar to what it sells for here. And for the great winemakers of Tasmania to compete in that field, the majority of their wines are cheaper than that point, because that's where the perception is. There are some great Tasmanian wines that are priced in Champagne territory and absolutely deserve to be. Not that they're trying to be Champagne, because they're made with the same quality mandate and they absolutely achieve their aspirations. But for the most part, the pricing is cheaper, and that's, I think, not inappropriate, because it gives the market an opportunity to buy great sparkling without spending $50 a bottle. You buy great Tasmanian sparkling for $30 or $35. You can buy champagne for those prices in Australia. It's not worth drinking. You're better off spending a bit more on champagne, because it costs more to make.
Right. Okay. So in your pamphlet, I saw that these are wines that you have personally chosen. Mm. What about these wineries make them stand out to you, that this is what you wanted to bring to New York?
The great wines of the world all have things in common that as a wine judge I'm always looking for. Things like persistence of palate. How long can you taste it after you swallow? What's the balance in these wines? Is the acidity, the sweetness, the fruit, the oak, the acidity, the phenolics, everything, tannins, if it's red, is everything in the right place? Do these wines have a sense of place? Do they have a characteristic that I can say, that tastes like the Piper's River District in the north of Tasmania? Is there an individuality that speaks of a vineyard, or a blend that speaks of complexity? Is there a desire to have a second glass? Do I love drinking this wine? Those are the things I'm looking for as a wine judge. Those are the things I'm looking for as a writer and as a drinker, a consumer of wine. And those are the things that I look for in the kind of wines that I'd like to showcase to bring to events like what we've done this week. The benefit in Tasmania is that this is not a wine region, and it never will be, that can produce bulk cheap wines and dumb it down. In the same way that we saw German Riesling dumbed down in the 1980s, New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc in the 2000s, because popular categories tend to have cowboys come in and exploit them, producing bigger and bigger volumes of bulk wines that get largely exported at lower prices and bring down the image of the whole region. The reason that hasn't happened in Tasmania, and the reason it will never happen, is because Tasmania is an island. It's isolated. The only way to get there is on a plane or a boat. There's no bridge. You can't take semi-trailers across. And yet most of its market, of course, is off that island. So production is expensive. You can't make cheap Tasmania wine. Yes, you can make it for less than Champagne, but not cheap like the bulk wines out of the south of France or even mainland Australia. And so for that reason, while I'm very discerning in the wines that I'm looking to showcase, and there are great wines in Tasmania and there are average wines in Tasmania, as there are everywhere, for the most part, the standard in Tasmania is so much higher on average, and that's reflected in the prices as well. The price of grapes in Tasmania for a winery to buy grapes from a grower is currently five times the average price of what it is on the mainland. It's double the price of the Adelaide Hills, it's double the price of Margaret River, great premium wine growing regions. This is reflective not only of the quality, but also the demand for Tasmanian wine. These are wines that Australians are drinking more and more, and yet the production is limited because it's expensive to bring viticulture to an island, it's expensive to ship the wines off the island, so it's difficult to grow production to keep up with demand. And I think we'll see the price of Tasmanian wines rise in the future, as we will in Champagne. As demand goes up, cost of production is going up too. We're currently seeing a lot of good value Champagnes on the shelves, a lot of great value Tasmanian wines, as you've seen today. The prices have to go up.
Okay, so many of these, like we said, are not available in the US, but you're bringing here for us to taste and for us to discuss about them. Mm. So how are people here going to be able to get these wines, and what's your prediction of how soon can we start to see them more commonly on the shelves?
The opportunity for this taste was twofold. Number one, to showcase some of the great wines from Tasmania that are currently available in the States, have existing distribution, circulation through some great restaurants and specialist wine stores, but also to give a sneak preview of some of the great wines that haven't ever been sold outside of Tasmania. Well, maybe a few times in Melbourne or Southern Australia, but these wines have never been exported. And yet there's interest from the producers in exporting, not because they have to do so to complete their sales, because they can't sell their wines, not at all. They're selling out already, many of them selling out before the next wine's released, but because they'd like to be able to showcase the best of Australia around the world. And for that reason, there are conversations happening even right today between these producers and some of the great importers and wholesaling agents of New York and also San Francisco earlier this week. So the answer to the question of when we'll see these wines is an ambiguous one, in that it takes some time for these relationships to be established and for wine to be shipped, and then it takes 3 months to get in, all those complications. But what I can say is that I've been delighted by the response to these wines by the trade and the media, particularly the importers here. They are super excited to bring some of these wines into the States. The conversations are happening. This will unfold over the coming days, weeks and months. And I look forward to bringing this tasting back next year and having more wines on the list that are readily available in these markets.
Excellent. And I look forward to coming back and being able to taste them. So the winemakers, the wineries, are they mostly family-owned? Are they co-ops? What can we see?
There are no massive wine producers in Tasmania for all the reasons I mentioned before. In fact, the very biggest producer, which is Jantz, is about the same size as a small champagne house. So that's the scale we're talking. And the majority of the estates in Tasmania are small family vineyards, and they are run by independent winemakers who either make their own wine, or many are so small that they don't even have winemaking facilities, but use one of the excellent contract winemaking suppliers in Tasmania, where they use an established winemaker to put their wines together, which is a good system because not all mums and dads vineyards have the expertise to make great wines, certainly not great sparkling, but utilising those contract facilities makes sense. So for the most part, we're only talking thousands or tens of thousands of cases, certainly not millions as we see in the big wine producers of the world.
Right. Okay, so that was going to be my next question, was what was like the average case production of these wineries? So we're looking at just a few thousand cases. Tell us about the altitude. What are the vineyards like? Are they on hills? What are the vineyards like? Are we mechanically harvesting? Are we manually harvesting?
Tasmania, unlike mainland Australia, is able to achieve its cold climate by latitude rather than altitude. And this is crucial because in mainland Australia, where there isn't sufficient southerly latitude for the most part to achieve the right conditions for cool climate wine growing, altitude provides cool temperatures, but it's different to cool by latitude because at higher altitude, the southern hemisphere has more ultraviolet than the northern hemisphere. And so the higher you go up a hill, the less protection you've got through the atmosphere, and more ultraviolet means more colour in the grape skins, more flavour in the grapes, and more sugar ripeness. They still have the cold nights to retain acidity, but because of that extra level of sunlight, they're achieving acidity and finesse, but at the same time, fruit concentration. The further south you go, in the same way as the further north you go in the northern hemisphere, we're able to achieve wines that have a more effortless balance, more elegance, more refinement, less sugar ripeness, so lower alcohol in the finished wines, and acidity that can be ripe without being green or astringent or hard or coarse or challenging on the palate. It can be ripe acidity that's still bright. And that to me is the defining feature of what I love about Champagne in the same way. Cold by latitude, not by altitude. There are very few vineyards in Champagne more than a few hundred metres above sea level, even though it's 200 kilometres inland from the nearest ocean. In Tasmania, the same is true, in that there are very few vineyards over a few hundred metres of altitude. But the other difference in Tasmania is that the climate's very much maritime. So the prevailing humidity, the winds, the rain is coming off the Southern Ocean, and that provides a humidity in Tasmania that provides an elegance to its wines, which is very different to the humidity in Champagne, which is a largely continental climate, but with soil, chalk soil, that's a massive sponge, vineyards that are trellised very low, close to that sponge, to retain the humidity in the vines and hence the elegance in the grapes. Tasmania does that not by low trellising, not by close planting, not by chalk, but by the humidity that comes off the ocean. What that means in Tasmania is that you don't need altitude to achieve cold climate. So like Champagne, some vineyards are a couple of hundred metres in elevation, but mostly less than that. We might see a little bit more pushing into some of the higher zones in years to come as global warming takes more of a grip, as we will see in Champagne and elsewhere. But for now, it's all about latitude. Aspect makes a difference. North-facing vineyards are common at the moment to catch a bit more sun, but as Tasmania warms up, we might see more southerly aspect in the planting. So it's a fascinating place. But the amazing thing about Tasmania is that most of it's not yet planted, and according to some of the great historical minds of Tasmanian wine growing, we probably haven't seen the best sites even discovered yet. So there's a lot to look forward to.
Okay. So you were kind of psychic in two realms with that. my one question was going to be, what is the thought process of global warming in Tasmania? Yes. But my second one is, what is the percentage of hectares that are planted?
There are only a couple of thousand hectares planted in Tasmania. Tasmania is not a big state. It's small even by Australian standards. But there are a lot more sites that are well suited to viticulture which have not yet been planted. So we're seeing good levels of planting at the moment. There's quite a lot in the 90s and 2000s when the industry was really starting to take off. There's some more happening now as demand for grapes goes up, prices go up. Everybody wants to buy great Tasmanian sparkling base and great Pinot and Chardonnay. A lot of mainland Australian producers have been shifting their focus to Tasmania because they see this as a bit of an insurance policy against global warming. Southeastern mainland Australia has suffered bitterly in the past decade from bushfires, droughts, heat waves, floods even. The extremes of climate are increasing, so we're seeing more frost damage, we're seeing more damage from smoke, tape, from fires. But the biggest issue on mainland Australia is drought and the availability of water, because while vines don't need a lot of water compared to some crops, they do need some water, of course. Tasmania is blessed, and while the south of Tasmania is very dry, there are initiatives there to produce more irrigation. The north of Tasmania is wet, and the consistency there, even though the yields are inconsistent, like Champagne again, the opportunities there to invest in cool climate viticulture, I see that as the future of Australian wine growing and the most reliable opportunity for ongoing future-proof cool climate wines.
So we were talking a little bit earlier, I was asking about the AVAs. So Tasmania is the AVA,
yes.
And then we have sub-regions or sub-AVAs within there, but you were mentioning that they're not legal terms, but there's no issue with putting them on the labels?
That's correct. Australia has something like 66 different wine regions around the country, and we know many of those, the Barossa Valley, McLaren Vale, Hunter Valley, etc. Tasmania is one of those. Tasmania itself is one wine region. And part of the reason for that is historic, in that you need to have a certain number of wine producers, a certain amount of a volume of production to qualify any of the zones to be their own individual regions. Now, that those kind of threshold levels have not been reached until recent vintages. And even though they have now, there is not yet an imperative to have each of the zones classified as its own distinct wine region. Partly political. Now, there are many zones in Tasmania producing sufficient volume that they could well be qualified as regions in themselves. The Tamar Valley is the biggest. It produced more than 30% of this year's harvest in itself. Second is the Coal River Valley, then the East Coast, then the Northeast. The other three zones are the Derwent Valley, Huon, and Northwest Piper's Brook, Devonport area for Northwest. They are much smaller and perhaps not as relevant for qualifying as their own regions just yet, although they could in the future. There are a few challenges around this. One is political. Where do you draw the boundaries? Is someone's vineyard in and someone's out on the basis of the region, and how do you settle that? And the other is a very simple financial one, in that it costs more than $20,000 to even register to apply as a region. And at the moment, as you pointed out, the growers are quite capable of and quite permitted to put on their label, this wine is from Piper's River, this wine is from Tamar Valley, etc. So they might say, well, why should we spend $20,000 officially being recognised when at the moment we can reap all the benefits because we're already able to use those names?
So just as a final thought, do you have any final things to, and one last concept to throw out there about Tasmania?
I'm excited about Tasmania, not because I was born there, I was, but not for that reason. But because in all of my tastings, and every year I publish my Australian Sparkling Wine Report, reviews of 500 Australian sparkling wines, and my champagne book and my champagne tastings. Within that context, looking at the wines of Tasmania and the other sparkling wines of the world, and the still wines for that matter too, I see no other region outside of Champagne as producing wines of the quality and consistency of Tasmania. And for that reason, I'm excited about it. As an independent critic who has nothing to gain from promoting Tasmania, I'm not an advocate of Tasmania, I'm an independent critic who looks at these wines and goes, wow, there are great things happening here, and what a privilege to share those with the world.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Tyson.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Dracaena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, Facebook, Snapchat, Google, and Periscope as @DracaenaWines. I am also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd, or email us at DracaenaWines.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find us more easily. We are found on all of your favorite aggregators. To subscribe easily to iTunes, go to bit.ly/DracaenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/DracaenaPodcast. And that's a capital D for Dracaena and capital P for podcast. Please check out our award-winning wines and find out about our wine club at DracaenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte.